We're talking with Paul Dean and Keith Basterfield about Pentagon UFO revelations. We've learned so much in the last 14 months or so. Had never heard of Lou Elizondo before, had never heard of ATIP or ALSAP or any of the other acronyms that have come forward. And we're all hoping, I guess, if you're interested in this topic, you're hoping that more revelations are just around the corner. Certainly, that's some of the indications that's been given to me by people who are directly involved with this stuff, but you never know until it happens. We'll be right back and pick up the conversation with my guests here on Coast to Coast AM. Before the break, Keith, you were telling me about efforts to, and it's a great idea, to look into the personal papers of the three senators who were instrumental in getting the program off the ground. So where does it stand?
Well, my last effort was looking for papers that archived in the Senator Reid collection at the University of Nevada. You were quite right when you said there was a large volume. Something like about 2,000 archive boxes of his material went to the university 2 years ago, and I was asking them to find a single letter for me. So, not unexpectedly, the answer came back: we can't find anything at this stage. But at least it was worthwhile trying. It was an avenue I don't think anyone else had thought of. But then I moved on to another way. I thought, why not scour places like the U.S. Federal Register and the Congressional Record? Could we possibly find anything in those sort of documents? But no, I couldn't find anything. It was up to a Swedish researcher, a fellow called Roger Glassell, who actually found such a mention of the program. He found that in an April 9th, 2018 issue of the Congressional Record, there's actually a note that a Defense Intelligence Agency sent a letter to the House Armed Services Committee transmitting a list of all the products produced under the AATIP pursuant to a contract. Now, that in itself is a good piece of documentation to know. Here's the DI saying, yep, well, we did, the program was ours, and we produced some products from it, and here's a list of all those products. What they are, of course, no one else knows. Like a number of people, I've got in an FOI request for a copy of that letter from the DIA to Congress, and also asking for a copy of the list of products. Whether we will get that and how long that might take if we do is anyone's guess. But that was another avenue of searching for the paper trail, I guess.
Well, that's a great idea. You know, I think part of the frustration and the reason for confusion is because of the names. There's always been a program like ATIP, the ATIP we know of now, the assignment given to Lou Elizondo, where he coordinates with a loose federation of other people and other agencies. And when a case would come in to, say, the Navy or as some other branch of the service, they would sort of circulate information around files in this small group. It's more of an assignment than a program. And I don't know if that was called ATIP before Lou was there and before the Bigelow contract was created. My understanding was that the Bigelow contract and the documents that we have show it was created under something called AUSAP. And Bass was the contracting, the company that got the contract. DIA issued the contract. Somewhere along the line, in the next couple of months after it was formed, that program's name changed to ATIP. So by the time 2009 comes around, Senator Reid sends a letter to a group of people, including the Secretary of Defense. He was calling it ATIP. And then when the Bass contract went away, what was left was called ATIP. So who knows what that thing was called before it was ATIP, before AUSAP was created. You can see where a lot of the confusion comes from.
It is, and it's like a good jigsaw puzzle or a good detective story where you've got to take pieces of data and move them around until you get the best fit. And whether or not that's the right fit, probably only time will tell. But talking about paperwork, and governments love paperwork. I used to work for the federal government here in Australia, and we drowned in paperwork. So my thinking was, apart from trying the congressional papers, why not see if there was anything online which actually talked about the ASAP program? And I recall that at one stage you showed on a class TV show a small clip of a solicitation or call for bids from the DIA for the ASAP program. And I thought, well, I wonder if it's possible to find a public copy of that. And after many, many hours of searching, I actually found, as you know, an online copy of the 32-page solicitation, which in its 32 pages mentions the word UFO zero times.
Right.
And there's quite a few people who've said, well, how do we know the ASAP program was looking at UFOs? Well, we know because of what you have to read in between the lines. It was looking for something, a breakthrough jump in technology, ideas about that, looking 30 years into the future. And it was definitely, it said in the solicitation, we're not talking about simply trying to project what we know today of the military aircraft of places like China and Russia. We're looking for something breakthrough. So finding that online was good, but I guess that's part of the jigsaw puzzle. It's a contract, it's a solicitation. It actually says, if you look carefully at the top of the document, it says it's the solicitation and the contract. And a lot of people have been looking for an ASAP contract. Well, that document is both. It's just simply that when the DIA announced or came up with a successful company, a Bigelow Aerospace Advanced Space Studies, then they simply had to go to the same document, insert Bigelow's name, the equivalent of tax file number, social security number, certain numbers that the government uses for paying its contractors, put the amount of $10 million there, and the solicitation becomes a contract. So perhaps we do really have a public document, contract, and solicitation all in one place there.
Are you suspicious at any step of the way about the information that's come forward and what the ultimate motives might be? Here in American ufology, we, of course, have people looking for dark motives and dark plots and disinformation pretty much constantly. Anything that comes forward is viewed with suspicion. As you look at what has come out and the statements made by Lou, have your suspicions been raised that some kind of dark motives are playing out here, that we're being misled or led down a path, that this is disinformation of some sort? Paul, why don't we start with you and then Keith, the same question.
Well, I mean, there will always be, that there is always a large element of UFO enthusiasts and paranormal enthusiasts who are looking for, hoping for, or suspicious of something much larger, a secret cabal, a multi-generational mass cover-up, something international, something worth billions of dollars. I don't see any evidence as such that Lou's role within the Department of Defense, was in any way suspicious. That it would be like accusing him of being now a full-time counterintelligence or disinformation or psychological warfare officer. Like it's rather in some ways it could even be quite insulting. It's not that there is simply that there is no evidence that. To me, that this is part of something that's come right down from the top, from the White House or from the Joint Staff, that is some sort of like a panic mode way of throwing UFO researchers off the trail. I mean, look, honestly, 99%. I know quite a few people in the military in Australia, and virtually none of them know anything about the UFO topic. Even radar operators have simply seen nothing. In their scope operations or their review of radar data, they've seen nothing unusual. This is something I wouldn't call it niche. It's more it's more confusing than anything. I personally don't think with the assessment of UFO cases, I don't think that the U.S. military is that far ahead. Well, is that far ahead of us? They certainly have a lot more data. There's no question. At joint surveillance level and combined surveillance level, primary integrated air defense systems and NORAD and space surveillance, they have access to data we couldn't possibly dream of. But is it some, you know, like is the release of the entire ATIP story some smokescreen, some to some toxic secret cabal that wants to rule the world. I mean, I've seen this stuff, and it just seeps into everything like a poison dye on Facebook, and it just confuses. It annoys me because it confuses new people to the topic. So I don't personally see anything that suspicious. However, I, for instance, have some copies of some doctrine, some United States Air Force, Office of Air Force Special Investigation manuals and instructions that do specifically say that when, for instance, the United States Air Force's mission and mandate is under threat, that disinformation officers can ply their trade, that passports can be forged, false or faulty information is inserted into media organisations, that clubs or universities can be disrupted, etc. So, I mean, it's not beyond the realms of possibility that there is some aspect in throughout UFO history of disinformation and clinical distortion of facts or whatever. But in this particular case, with the case of AATIP and Elizondo and Bigelow's connection, I just don't see it personally myself at all.
Same thing, Keith. You know, this is sort of ufologists who can't take yes for an answer. A long trail of paper evidence that suggests that there has been a cover-up, that the Pentagon has not been honest, that legitimate military pilots have had unusual encounters that are well documented, and the information has not been made available to all of us, that we've been misled. Now it's coming out one way or another. And people don't want to accept that it could be real, even though they have suspected exactly that for a long time.
Yes, I think, George, it's actually good to sit at a distance from U.S. ufology at times. And I think this is one of those times. I don't subscribe to the dark motives or conspiracy style of theories. I never have. I prefer to base my findings on the data that I can see. And here we have a charge being led by a private company to the STARS Academy. I find their efforts very commendable. I like the private sector approach. It's really good to see some out-of-the-box thinking and out-of-the-box approaching. And I think that the range of skills which the actual TTSA team members have is quite adequate to their mission. So I like to sit way back from U.S. ufology at times.
Well, that's one of the reasons you guys make such great guests. You know, we look at the big picture, at least my sense of it is, there is still resistance within the Pentagon. I mean, it's not one monolithic organization and everybody thinks the same way. There is opposition there. You can sense that from some of the public statements that have been issued in response to questions after the ATIP program became public and statements made by Lou. They don't like talking about this, and they're not just jumping over themselves to release all the hidden files. Would you agree?
Yes, I agree. I think that's something which you can go back 20, 30 years. I've just been spending a little bit of time rereading Jacques Vallée's three volumes of his diaries from the 1950s right through to the late 1980s. And he comments time after time about the fact that there is the Pentagon or the Department of Defense in the U.S., as in Australia, is built of a bunch of silos, and only occasionally do people come out of those silos and talk to each other. And the old adage about the left hand doesn't know what the right hand is doing is probably more apparent there. So, yes, with human nature, there's going to be people who have religious perspectives, people who have science perspectives, and it's going to be a little bit of a battle to see who succeeds there. But I think at this stage, it's quite positive that we have a charge being led by somebody outside of who's now outside of the Pentagon, who's come from within the Pentagon and understands those views. So I'm quite positive about what's coming forward.
Let me ask you this, Paul, are you optimistic about where things go from here? You know, there's a, anytime you mention UFOs in America, you get people demanding disclosure, the public's right to know, we need it all, we need it now, which I would say is not going to happen. But are you optimistic that there will be further releases, that additional information and understanding are forthcoming?
Yeah, I am. Look, I'm more optimistic now than I have been in the past. I'm cautiously optimistic. I think that one thing I will mention is this, and it's something I feel is very, very important. There's two organisations in the United States within the defence structure that, if providing UFOs actually exist, that there's two organisations that specifically will be sitting on or have sat on enormous quantities of data, and they are the North American Aerospace Defence Command, NORAD, and the US Strategic Command, STRATCOM. NORAD is responsible for air sovereignty, airspace management, airspace surveillance. STRATCOM is partially responsible for space surveillance, like the tracking of satellites and uncorrelated targets and so on like that. What worries me is with the AATIP effort and other efforts going back into the past, other government efforts that we probably don't even know about, like efforts maybe within the Federal Aviation Administration, maybe efforts at wing or group level, say in, I don't know, Alaska Air Command or somewhere like that. What we see is the same stuff. We see pilot reports, pilot photography. In any of this, I mean, take the last year, for example, with AATIP and everything we've found out about it, with whatever paperwork we've had come out, and with every single speech or symposium that Lou Elizondo has talked about, not once ever has NORAD or US STRATCOM being mentioned. I mean, it's always someone else. It's always the DIA's data, or it's always, you know, pilot reports through the FAA to Bigelow Aerospace or whatever. Anything but NORAD, anything but STRATCOM. And to that, it's frustrating because they could be sitting on the best multi-radar tracking data of objects that, you know, I'll use the, what would you call it, the stereotypical objects doing hairpin turns at, you know, 50,000 k's an hour, that sort of thing. If it's anywhere on the planet, it's going to be at NORAD or US STRATCOM. And if Lou and the AATIP effort and anyone else in the CIA or wherever has not accessed those streams of data, has not accessed, I mean, for instance, NORAD at headquarters within the Aerospace Directorate, they put together these things called blue ribbon panels. NORAD has blue ribbon panels for any problem they have, any unusual radar outages that keep occurring, or any sudden threat from a country that has never been threatening before, whatever. And I would suspect that there's been blue ribbon panels about UFOs before, and we're not seeing that information at all. We never have. And so in that respect, I'm not optimistic that every stone is being unturned. I mean, but I am certainly very optimistic that people, I mean, started with the New York Times, which is reputable and extremely well known. You've got Luis Elizondo, who appears to be an upstanding citizen, quite patriotic. So I mean, a lot of people are discussing UFOs now, and quite seriously. But are we? Am I optimistic that, say, NORAD or some of the sector commands that watch everything in the US and US and Canadian airspace, or right out into space, are we seeing any response from them? I mean, they haven't even made a comment. They haven't even denied UFOs exist, let alone actually contributed. But as far as we know, I would love to be able to ask Luis Elizondo if he actually did have any correspondence with
I'll tell you what, I'll ask him.
Whatever.
I'll ask him. We're talking about Paul Dean and Keith Basterfield about Pentagon UFO programs. We're talking with Paul Dean and Keith Basterfield about the Pentagon UFO programs, ATIP, OSAP, the contractor BAS on behalf of DIA. A lot of information has come out into the public arena in the last year, and more may be on the way. In a moment, we'll take some of your calls and questions and comments from my guests here on Coast to Coast AM. Paul and Keith, you know, the New York Times story, all the media coverage that's happened here that followed that, it seems to have sparked some interest at high levels in Washington. You've seen the rumors and reports of that kind of interest, and the idea that maybe more revelations will be coming in 2019. Give me your sense of what could happen next. I mean, are we at a tipping point, do you think, that enough information has come out now, the public didn't freak out, that maybe it encourages the release of additional information? Paul, starting with you.
Look, it is a slow tipping point. I mean, it's like a hill. It's not like, I don't think it's like a cascading thing where, look, the amount of media reporting straight after the New York Times and Politico episode on the 16th, 17th of December, depending on where you live in the world, it was impressive. I mean, I don't know if we're at a tipping point in the Pentagon. Things move very slowly. If it's not, I guess, I know quite a bit about military activities, operations and so on. And if it's not something that's mission critical, if it's not something that's endangering lives on the battlefield or will be highly embarrassing for, say, the Joint Chiefs of Staff or something like that, or the major commanders, things, I think, move pretty slowly. And it's definitely a tipping point. I mean, the closure of Project Blue Book in 1969 and the Condon UFO report was a tipping point. The fiasco with MJ-12 and Richard Dota in the 80s, that was an unusual tipping point. Project Sign in 1947 and 48 was a tipping point. This is another major chapter. I mean, this is a really major chapter. What's happening in the corridors of the Pentagon and at Langley, Virginia, at the CIA or wherever, who knows? We're not going to know for quite a while. But I think that one thing I think it will do is cause more people to come out, more combat pilots, more flight crew people and navigators, more seamen, more battle space managers and Coast Guard operatives and so on. There will be plenty more of that in the future. Keith can probably answer this a bit better, though.
Well, Keith, let me put it this way. You've been at this longer than any of us, chasing this. Did you think you would see even this much progress in your lifetime?
No, I didn't. And I think we are getting close to a tipping point. And I've actually, because it's around Christmas time, prepared my Christmas wish list for Santa for 2019. It reads as follows. More videos. Paul and I have a source that tells us that at the 2015 off the Florida coast aircraft battle group encounters, there were at least 5 videos taken on that occasion. We've only seen one of those, the GoFast, and possibly the gimbal, possibly 2 of those. But there are certainly at least 3 more that we're aware of that were taken during that time. So I'd like to see those revealed. I'd also, on my Christmas wish list, like to see the results of analyses which TTSA are presently doing on alleged fragments from UFOs. Behind the scenes, I've been having discussions with a few people who are telling me that we may see some information about some very materials with very unusual isotopic ratios, suggestive that they've been re-engineered.
Now, if that turns out to be
peer-reviewed, checked, that is going to be very interesting. And thirdly, on my Santa list, I'd like to see more of the work of Kit Green and Gary Nolan, who behind the scenes for several years now have been looking at people who've been injured by close encounters with the phenomena. And that's something which was included in the ASAP solicitation way back in 2008. So that's my Santa wish list. More videos, results of analyses, and more on the work of people like Kit Green and Gary Nolan, who are burrowing away in the background, and we hear very little about their work.
So what you don't see in any of the documents that have been released so far is any mention of aliens or ET. I mean, the language, as you've commented before, they don't mention UFOs or anything exotic, quite that exotic, and for good reasons. I mean, nobody wants to be the alien chaser at the Pentagon, so they couch it in different kinds of terms. But, you know, this is from somewhere else. No one's anxious to say it, but it's from somewhere else. It's not ours. It's not Russians. It's not Chinese. Are you concerned about the Pentagon or the government, our government, acknowledging that kind of a thing and how the public might react? Paul?
Yeah, that's a very, very good question. I think it's very hard for someone really high up in government who simply wasn't there. They haven't served, say, in the actual armed forces for decades, to sit back and say, look, our airspace has been penetrated routinely, completely incurred on, by objects, significantly sized objects that are tangibly picked up on radar systems or easily photo, like imaged, that are scaring the hell out of pilots and seamen. To get up and actually say that, it wouldn't be in those words, but to get up and actually disclose that there are objects over the continental United States that get away without a scratch and that we have so much trouble against, I don't think they're going to come out and say that. I mean, so we've got some videos, some 20-second videos and maybe some even better videos. We've got some great historical cases that we can refer to. But is someone like a lieutenant general or a brigadier general going to get up and admit to the public in some sort of press release that our systems are woefully inadequate despite the billions of dollars that we've paid as taxpayers? Are they going to get up and say, look, we're very, very concerned about the safety of our pilots now. We really need to ground all flights during UFO encounters? I don't think it's going to happen. It's going to be extremely slow. That's my personal feeling.
Keith, you have both mentioned that the New York Times story got a lot of coverage down there, and I don't know, did that continue? Is there still a heightened awareness of this story among the general public?
Not so much now. It seems to have faded. It certainly caused a fair amount of interest when the story broke, but it has declined. And I think I agree with Paul that the slow release of information takes it away from being a continuing story, front page story down here. But it certainly, my best analysis sort of based on all this is that perhaps we're going to need the old classic people power revolution to drive this. And coming back to what I said earlier, with the TTSA as a private company, not being government, is quite in a good driving seat at the present moment. And if we were to get behind that and other such groups that are wanting to do have the same aims, then I think that we, the people, are probably going to be the way that it's going to come out.
Well, I would agree with you in the sense that, you know, the Pentagon has sort of had one line about this topic for a long, long time and painted themselves into a corner. And perhaps TTSA is able to say things that they, people in the military, can't say for themselves. Let's take a call or two. Richard in New Jersey on the wildcard line. Good morning.
I want to say, is NASA a fraud? Are astronauts being told to basically shut up? I mean, is Donald Trump's Space Force a fraud? I mean, as part of the government pressing so hard on the lid of security, because Donald Trump is talking about Space Force, but this is basically part of the cover-up. I mean, is NASA a fraud?
Richard, let me get our guests' comments on this. You think there's any connection between the Space Force and the proposed Space Force and UFOs? Seems specious.
I'll take that first. My reading of what's happened is I don't think there is. I can understand how people could form that view, but sitting at a distance again from the U.S. and the U.S. policies, my own thought is that there probably is no connection. I'd stand corrected, but that's my perspective. What about you, Paul?
Well, the funny thing is about with this Space Force, see, America's military is divided up into the four major branches: Army, Air Force, Navy, and Marine. And underneath them, you've got something called Unified Combatant Command, right? And the funny thing is, America has actually nearly had a full Space Force before that would be alongside the Army, Air Force, Navy, etc. Back in 1980, the Air Force Space Command, Navy Space Command, and Army Space Command actually joined assets and formed something called the U.S. Space Command. And it had 26,000 employees, and it was actually disorganized. Like, it was disorganized in 2002 and renamed STRATCOM, U.S. STRATCOM. So this business about an important combined Space Force is actually nothing new. They've been talking about this, like policymakers have been talking about this for so long, since I think 1967. I don't think, as far as, I think the world is so space orientated with everything from communication satellites to eavesdropping through to situational awareness from optical platforms in space. Of course, one day the world is we are going to have major space forces. And a U.S. Space Force would definitely be one of them. As far as NASA goes, my personal feeling is that over the years, NASA employees have known a lot about UFOs. That they have definitely fudged it back to the Air Force, like past the buck. I think there's been piles of discussion within NASA, and some of it is stuff we will never find. I do know that in 1977, I think it was 77, NASA actually, and very few people know this, NASA was actually coordinating with the CIA on what information about UFOs to release to the public. So they were basically asking the CIA for advice about how to handle inquiries about UFOs. But as far as NASA being some sort of gatekeeper of UFOs using space as some sort of taxi service between one planet and another, and it's just, I think it's personally preposterous, because it would just involve so many thousands of employees, and you know, no one can keep that many secrets. Like, so, you know, see what happens, though.
Let me ask you this. Would the Australian military basically be in lockstep with the U.S. On something like this? Follow the lead?
Keith?
Well, I know it has previously always followed U.S. policy in terms of its interest in UFOs. My search through the Australian National Archives for Australian government agency UFO files makes very interesting reading, because even as early as the 1970s, we were still sending off correspondence to the US and to the UK asking for their advice and views on UFOs. So we certainly followed that. We, unlike other countries in South America and Europe, discontinued our official UFO investigations back in the 1980s, 1990s. The U.S. government, the Australian government, for the last 20 years, has not had an official UFO investigation agency at all. And from our contacts or our internal contacts with the various people, there doesn't seem to be any covert study occurring at this time. But yes, we traditionally followed U.S. policy.
East of the Rockies, Joe, good morning.
Yeah, hi, Paul and Keith. My question would be, do these documents reference satellite technology in any way? I know there's got to be concern about keeping the satellites afloat. I don't know if the planes themselves rely on satellite technology to a great degree, but also, what is the coverage of a satellite in terms of what they can pick up from the upper atmosphere into the lower atmosphere in terms of what might be flying around? And also, is there any referencing the original paperclip group? There have been some claims that they might have had space technology like Wernher von Braun from somewhere else.
I'll tell you what, Joe, that's a lot to chew on here. Let's take the satellite question first. Paul, you mentioned about NORAD before. I mean, those are the guys with the sensors. If something's flying in and out, those are the guys who should know.
Yeah, absolutely. I will tell you one thing. The U.S. Department of Defense, it's specifically Air Force Space Command, they have a bunch of satellites, like an entire... they still sort of have their rename, but a bunch of satellites called the DSP satellites, Defense Support Program. And their job, the Defense Support Program satellites, their job is to, they've got these extremely sensitive light sensitivity devices that pick up very rapid flashes. And what they're looking for is, they're looking for nuclear blasts. They're looking for test nuclear blasts, or in fact the real deal, like World War III. And we know that those satellites, they're operated by the Air Force Space Command, and they pass data to STRATCOM and NORAD. We know that they definitely could pick up something really unusual. Like if you had a situation, say in the upper atmosphere, where a very, very bright object or a very, very, very reflective object, also maybe also with a lot of friction against the atmosphere, That definitely could be picked up by a DSP satellite. And there has been actual allegations. In 1984 particularly, there was allegations by a chap called Ron Rieger and another chap called Lee Graham that the DSP satellites had in fact actually picked up UFO events in space. As far as detection, like for instance with photography from space, the National Reconnaissance Office, their satellites that they supply to the US military have just gotten more and more sensitive, faster and faster in multiple wavelengths, colour. I would not be remotely surprised if the NRO and the Air Force Space Command have picked up things in the atmosphere which they simply were not expecting.
I think we can be hopeful that maybe we'll get to see that either this year or next or sometime in the near future. Paul Dean, Keith Basterfield, can't thank you enough for coming on. I think there's going to be enough material to discuss that we should have you on again in a couple of months. I hope so anyway.
Sure.
Thank you, gentlemen. Yeah. We have links to your writings on the Coast to Coast website so people can check it out. And I would recommend it highly. Thanks also to Adam Gorightly and Greg Bishop, my earlier guests, and to my colleagues there at Coast, Michael Cosio, Marlene Sray, our webmaster tonight, Lex Lonehood, Dan Galante, and Chris Boros. I'm George Knapp. Have a Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays, everyone. We'll see you next year. Bye.